are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. I'm going to be reading part 3 of Death at the Dragon Circus. Before I get started, I just want to say this has been a bit of a busy week. I've just released Dance Princess Dance, the novella, across various ebook platforms. If you don't have a copy of that, you can pick it up just about anywhere. Also, I'm not sure if I mentioned before that Glass Slipper Scandal, the first of the Castle Charming stories, was recently nominated for a DITMAR, which I don't know if this is true, but I kind of think it might be the first piece of fiction that was originally broadcast as a podcast to be nominated for a DITMAR. That may or may not be true. Maybe I need to go back and have a close look. But it's not something that happens very often. So I'm just going to claim status of being first until I either do the research or somebody else tells me otherwise. But that's very cool. And you can download the prose version, the ebook version of Glass Slipper Scandal still for free from InstaFreebie. So, Death at the Dragon Circus was recently published in the anthology And Then, The Great Big Book of Awesome Adventure Tales. So, Death at the Dragon Circus Part 3, in which Brennan is not a civilian. Kurt was in a filthy mood, and the last thing he needed right now was a guided tour as to exactly why he had failed to impress Puck's precious boss. So, of course, when he made his way out of the Big Top, the first thing he heard was their half-whispered conversation. "They're good people, Gaffer," Puck pleaded. "You know how hard it is to find crew who don't freak out about the dragons, and the audition was a bust. Inga's our only chance to replace Molly this week. If we don't make room for her brother, she might walk. Since when do we turn down new muscle?" If there was anything guaranteed to make Kurt feel the ache of every bone he'd ever broken, it was hearing a kid like Puck refer to him as new muscle. Brennan gave a sharp laugh. "Since when?" "Since we found ourselves up to our ears in an accidental goldmine of baby fucking dragons. Every show in the country will be after them, not to mention private collectors and the gangs and anyone else looking to make a fast buck. Rusty proved that we can't trust our own right now, let alone strangers." Puck groaned. "I didn't think of that." "Yeah, it's my job to think about this shit, and your job to say yes, sir," the gaffer snarled. "We're not taking on new crew, even if we get down to our last carpenter and the ballerinas have to haul tent ropes. Biceps and bright blue eyes and good with dragons is exactly the type they would use to get in undercover with us. We can't afford to let our guard down. Not until the babies are big enough to defend themselves." Kurt had heard enough. He kept walking until their voices disappeared into a low murmur behind him. He skirted around some argumentative clowns and a couple of carnies laden down with a crate of flashy costume props, and finally made it to the metal fence. It was in disrepair for an outfit so concerned with the possibility of dragon theft. There was a place behind some scrubby bushes where part of the fencing had curled up, and it was large enough for a couple of lads to squeeze in, as indeed they were doing right now. Kurt leaned a hip against the fence and waited for the boys to notice they'd been spotted. "Closed until 3, he said evenly, and they both scrambled back through the hole, their feet scraping on the gravel of the far side of the fence. Here, yeah, in retrospect, his list of possible job skills probably needed to factor in his ability to scare people by looking at him sideways. Nightclub bouncer, maybe. Bodyguard. Or, based on the thugs around here, clown. Though anything circus-related was off the menu, as far as he was concerned. Kurt jammed the broken piece of fencing closed with his foot and propped a large rock against it. After some contemplation, he scaled the fence easily and dropped down on the far side. Better that than do the walk of shame in front of the grease paint brigade over at the main gate. There was a wide yard here for automobiles and carriages. Kurt strolled along, resisting the urge to take his frustration out on any of the larger rocks strewn about the place. He almost missed them. A couple leaned against the fence in the shadow of a giant dragon circus billboard. Some fella, crowding in around his girl. Kurt scuffed the ground extra hard as he walked and saw the fella's shoulders tense. That got his attention. Now that he looked properly, they weren't kissing or cuddling at all. The man leaned in, muttering to her low, and she was pulling her face away from him. Body language was everything. The girl was 20 years younger than the bloke, and Kurt recognized her now. She was Puck's friend, the one who'd been juggling Big Blue on the train. "Hey, Finn," he said, calling out to her as if it was no big deal. "Your dad's looking for you, back at the Big Top." If he was interfering, she could let him know. Damn it all, this brother bullshit was like a virus once it got into you. He'd be protecting dames all over the place at this rate. That was going to cut into his spare time. "Thanks," Finn got out. She wriggled like she wanted to get away, but the bruiser had a firm grip on her shoulder. Kurt did not like that at all. "Take a hike, mate," growled the bruiser. "Yeah," said Kurt, rolling around on his feet like he'd had a few beers and didn't really give a shit what circus girls got up to when their daddies weren't watching. "If you say so, mate. You know she's 15. Jailbait." "Screw you," said Finn, not having to feign her outrage. Kurt laughed. "Seriously, kid, you're going to get into trouble if you don't muck out the elephant stall by lunchtime." Finn rolled her eyes at him. Clear as day, she moved her eyes to four different points around the yard before looking back at Kurt. Four others nearby then. Good to know. "Not going to tell you again," said the thug, keeping his arm shoved against Finn's chest. He half turned, snarling at Kurt with gold-capped teeth. "Keep walking, pal." Finn hit him. Her hand was tiny, and she barely had any power behind it apart from belligerence. But she got him in the eye good. The bruiser squeezed her between his hands like he was going to crush her against the fence. "You little bitch. They want to use me to steal the babies," she yelled. Kurt had counted the shadows. He knew where the thug's friends were, and he could sense them approaching. This was going to happen fast. He rotated on the balls of his feet, hooked his arm around the thick neck of the arsehole that had his hands all over Finn, and flipped him to the ground with a sharp crack, which was the best sound he'd heard all day. "Run," he advised Finn. The girl took off along the fence like a steam train, and Kurt followed her, circling wide to make sure he was between her and the other thugs, who thundered across the yard in their direction. It was a good fight. The closest thing to real exercise he'd gotten since he became Kurt Frostad. One came flying at him from the left, and Kurt spun to take him down, then disarmed him with a set of brass knuckles that came in real handy for the next one, who was bigger than the first two put together. He ran after that, scrambling after Finn, who didn't look back as she dashed to safety. Good girl. The last two thugs, bright with gang tattoos, slammed into him in unison when he was nearly at the gate. Kurt's hands and feet took over. When he was done, the attackers lay gasping on the ground. Their knives were lined up neatly along the fence line, and he'd managed to work up a sweat. When he glanced up, wiping a line of dust-caked moisture off his forehead, that turned out to be partly blood, he saw Finn hovering in the gateway, flanked by several surly clowns. She nodded at him, shaking on her feet, and disappeared into the safety of the circus ground. Kurt gave an insulting salute in the direction of the clowns and headed off in search of a boarding house. Yeah, he'd had enough circus for a lifetime. "You're an idiot," said Inga a few hours later, when she let herself in through the window of the room Kurt had rented. Somehow she'd managed to get here without the dust of the city caking itself onto her skin. "What else is new?" Kurt grunted from where he lay on one of the narrow beds, scanning the local broadsheet for jobs. Hauling boxes and skinning fish were his best chances this week. At least the fish would need his knife skills. Inga sat on the end of his bed, prodding him until he moved over to make room for her. "Brennan wants to talk to you. Brennan can suck my dick." "I don't think that's on offer," she said archly. "He's going to offer you a place in the crew." No, he's not, Kurt growled. I get it. You like the trapeze shit. That's fine. I can keep myself busy until they move on to the next city, and we'll look for something more permanent after that. From Inga, a silence was as meaningful as anything she had to say out loud. When Kurt felt it had gone on long enough, he glanced up to read her expression. Damn it. Seriously? He moaned. It's been less than a day. I love it, Kurt, she told him. I really do. The people are good. They're outsiders, too. We don't have to pretend to be normal. You should give them a chance. She elbowed him hard. It was the most realistic sister trait she'd developed so far. Come to the show tonight. Grab some food in the services tent afterwards and listen to what Brennan has to offer you. Kurt glared at her. Of course he was going to do what she said, still. He could complain about it. He seriously changed his mind because I beat up a couple of heavies along their fence line. It proved your usefulness nicely. And Finn is the ringmaster's daughter. Her word goes a long way. Inga smirked. You impressed the clowns. He gave her a scornful look. You know, if we were planning to steal those baby dragons, we would have set up a scenario exactly like that to trick the circus folk into trusting me. Inga cracked her back, running through a few of her favourite stretches to loosen up after her hard day of rehearsals. I know that. And you know that. They're civilians, Sunshine. They could use a little professional advice to keep the bad guys at bay. Brennan's not a civilian, Kurt growled. Their precious gaffer is a lot like us. Bet you half a dollar he used to be in our line of work. Inga didn't look surprised. So why is he playing dumb? I don't know. This is why I... He gave up. So, dinner and a show. Yeah. Inga leaned in and kissed him solemnly on both cheeks. You're supposed to tell me to break a leg. It's good luck. This is worse than that time we had to pretend to be opera singers, Kurt muttered. I know you liked the costumes. The show was awful. Kurt hated it. He could see the skill involved. Everyone from the clowns to the acrobats to the ballerinas and the trapeze artists themselves were nothing short of spectacular. Inga, Cato and Cicero performed a shortened version of the usual Birds of Paradise routine, apparently, but it was clear they were working well together. The potential for brilliance was there. Then, of course, there were the dragons. Nearly every performance involved them, whether the creatures were performing tricks at the commands of the ringmaster or the satin-clad pair of trainers that were Puck and Finn. Dragons danced through the air routines, played up to the clowns, and scared the shit out of the audience by flaming brightly a little too close to the cheap seats. Still, Kurt hated it. He couldn't pay attention to the acts. Too busy reacting to the noise and smell of too many people in one place, no solid walls behind him, too many potential dangers jumbling up his head, putting him on high alert. He escaped long before the interval, fighting his way through the layers of canvas and tripping over a bunch of half-naked tightrope walkers in a flurry of powder and costume changes. Finally, he found a quiet spot to stand behind the big top and breathe in air that didn't taste of popped corn, grease paint and sticky hands. "Too much for you?" asked a low voice. Kurt glanced across and saw Brennan, still dressed like a random workman, nursing a mostly gone cigarette through its remaining sparks. "How do you stand it?" he asked, without thinking. Great way to make an impression on a potential employer. "I don't," Brennan grunted. "I don't give a crap about the performance, as long as the artists and the audience are happy. Too many other things to worry about around here." Kurt found that reassuring, that he wouldn't have to pretend to appreciate slapstick or dragon ballet. "We got off on the wrong foot earlier," Brennan said, after a comfortable silence. "Yeah, you reckon?" Kurt snorted. "Look, no offence, mate. It's just, if I was trying to bust open circus security, you're exactly who I'd send. That business with Finn today doesn't change that." "Good," said Kurt sharply. "It shouldn't." Nice to know he wouldn't be working for an idiot. He risked a grin that he'd been told was charming. "I'd send me to steal your baby dragons too." Brennan made a huffing sound that might have been a laugh. He gave Kurt a once-over that, under other circumstances, might have been a whole different kind of interest. "Come on," he said finally. "I want to show you something." Kurt resisted the urge to ask, "Is it your bedroom ceiling?" "Sure," he said, keeping it casual. "Whatever." The baby dragons were housed in a cage inside a tent, which smelled like scorched gum nuts and death warmed up. Riff, the angriest of all the surly clowns, was standing guard over the tent and didn't join them as they stepped inside. Kurt didn't blame him at all when he caught a lungful of the stench. "Holy shit!" "Here, mind your step," said Brennan, not even joking. "Don't they need fresh air or something?" "They live in caves. This is their natural habitat." Kurt looked around at the singed fabric and the soot-stained bars. "This is no one's natural habitat." Brennan folded his arms. "My grip is run off her feet and doesn't have enough assistance. A new dragon pen that's secure and open to the air is on her to-do list, but it's not high up. Don't reckon she'll get to it this week." "Ugh, this is you hazing the new bloke, isn't it?" Kurt accused. Brennan gave him a look that wasn't a smile. It wasn't anything, really. The challenge was in his voice. "Report to Carlotta in the morning. See if she likes you." "And if she doesn't like me?" asked Kurt, not keen on having to convince someone else he was worth keeping. "Then I'm going to have to force her to admit that she's 8 months pregnant and should put her feet up, and believe me, no one wants that conversation to happen in this lifetime. Do me a favour, Frostad. Save the charm for her." "I'll see what I can do," said Kurt. "Works for me," said Brennan, reaching out. Kurt almost dodged away before realising it was a friendly shoulder pat. Oh, casual touching. He was going to have to get used to that in a place like this, where performers ran around in their underwear the second they got off stage, and everyone pitched in with costume and makeup and ego stroking and chore wheels. This was going to be like the opera all over again. Only worse, because he wouldn't get to put a crossbow bolt into anyone at the end of it. Brennan finished the shoulder pat, as if he had no idea that he was blowing Kurt's mind. Welcome to the Dragon Circus. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can follow me on Twitter and Tumblr at TansyRR and at Sheep Might Fly, like my page on Facebook at TansyR Roberts, and you can sign up to my author newsletter by following the link in the show notes. See you next time.